In the name of the one who was and is to come. Amen. The year is 1836 in the Mexican region that will become the Republic of Texas. And enter three men. First is William Travis. At this point, he's been in Texas for 5 years. He has abandoned his wife and kids, dodged some bad debts, but he saw in the Republic of the Mexican Texas all kinds of opportunity, both of the nefarious kind and the good kind. Second character is Jim Bowie. In 1830, 6 years before this day, this year, he swore allegiance to Mexico. He forged land grants with such alacrity that he would have made Bernie Madoff proud. But he had a taste for killing, and we'll get to that in a little bit. And finally, Davy Crockett. I've got a t-shirt, and I'm glad my daughter is not here because she always gives me grief for this. I've got a t-shirt, and it's the most famous quote. And it says, "You all may go down there, and I will go to Texas." He's said to be able to kill a grizzly bear with a smile, but his smile got a little less than smiley when he lost his second term bid for congressman in Tennessee. So he thought, "I'm going to go there, and I'm going to make a life over." And these characters, with a motley crew, expelled a Mexican garrison in San Antonio, Texas, at the Alamo. Now, when they were inside the Alamo, Jim Bowie assured this ragtag band of about 200 people that it would become that, "Don't worry, the Mexicans ain't coming. They don't like it too cold up here." That the February was going to be too brutal for the Mexican soldiers. So they all said, "Oh, okay, I guess you might be right." Well, you know what happens, right? Who shows up? Santa Anna shows up. Now, he is the golden... We often, if you've done Texas history, you know, he's the cruel and foolish Santa Anna. But Santa Anna was a pretty smooth player. He was the golden boy of Mexico, and his charm and his well-spoken character had him the talk of all of Mexico. But he had a less than golden character when it came to be a military leader. So over the week, starting on February 26, 1836, to when the offensive began on March 6th, his troops swelled to about 1,800 troops who were going to siege the Alamo. 200 inside, 1,800 out. So, when you ever hear the rallying cry, remember the Alamo. It's a rallying cry for amazing bravery in the face of overwhelming odds. History's a little more complicated than that, I think. It always is, isn't it? So on March 6th, in the morning, Santa Anna had pledged that he will have breakfast inside the Alamo on this day. The shooting begins. William Travis, man, the guy apparently gets out of the chute before he runs to the front line, gets shot, and drug off the land. Bowie has a reputation for being able to kill 30 men with one knife. You remember Bowie knife? The truth is he had tuberculosis. He was on his deathbed. And his only contribution to the war effort was to have two men drag him out of the Alamo on his deathbed, prop him up, so that he could curse the Mexican soldiers with his fluent and wonderful Spanish. They drug him back, and there he lay. Crockett finally, as Santa Anna was eating breakfast, having probably migas and a wonderful coffee inside, was executed execution style outside of the Alamo. Now, if you listen to your Texas history, your mythology, there were 16 dead Mexican soldiers around him, but probably not. Santa Anna didn't fare too well either at the end of it. He won the battle, but then at the Battle of San Jacinto, with his troops split 38 miles just east of here, he was forced into surrender that would lead to the Republic of Texas. And the Republic of Texas would become a state of Texas not 10 years after. Now, why did I give you all this history? I think because Jesus would have understood those revolutionaries better than any of us. Jesus lived that kind of Alamo flavor revolution day in and day out in the region called the Galilee. The Galilee was known as a sort of a hotbed of spiders because zealots, people who wanted to overthrow Rome, people who hated Herod with all their fiber, were kind of just constantly popping up in the Galilee. When Jesus was a little boy, Judas the Galilean in 6 AD took up arms against Rome, and it fell apart. 60 years later, in 66 AD, after Jesus had gone into his glory, his later grandson, Menahem, would storm Mount Masada, which is this fantastic. Have you ever seen Mount Masada on pictures? It's one of the most amazing places, I think, in the whole world. It's this gigantic raised plateau, and it was a wonderful place to hold a military garrison. Well, Menahem storms Masada, takes some arms, goes back to Jerusalem, and temporarily captures the governor's palace in Jerusalem, and he was considered a heretic and a false prophet. So Jesus, and he feeds the 5,000 today, and I want you to look in your bulletin for a second. When he feeds the 5,000, you might have missed the context because the lectionary chops it right out. There's a piece in the beginning and a piece at the end. So Jesus comes to a deserted place where people are coming and going, and he has compassion on them. He feeds them with the bread of heaven and the bread of men and women, of loaves and fishes. And then, that what you heard in the gospel was not in italics, was when they had crossed over, they came to the land of Gennesaret and moored the boat. When they got out of the boat, the people at once recognized him and rushed about that whole region and began to bring the sick on mats wherever they heard he was. So when the zealots saw Jesus, they saw an opportunity. And I thought, this guy's got power. He can do miracles. He's pretty good in the crowd. He is going to be our figurehead for our revolution. They saw a king, a revolutionary, and a strong man, and they said, let's get him. Let's force him to be king, as well as you'll see in the Gospel of John next week. But he even knew that's going to be a dead end. I mean, he knows everything, but, you know, William Travis and the Galileans and Menahem and Judas the Galilean all have the same kind of thing. They rush forward, and sometimes they have success, and sometimes they don't. I think what Jesus wants for us, what Jesus wants in his people, is that we let him revolutionize us from the inside out. Because I think that's really the only revolutions that will actually last, is when we let him take care of us, we are going to be the people that we're called to be. We might actually do something good for the world, and we might actually change the world, but not until he has kind of totally rearranged our insides. When he saw at the story of the gospel today, when he saw the people, he felt compassion for them within his splenkizomai, his guts. He felt a deep and abiding compassion for these people who he saw, and he knew that they were kind of going off half-cocked, and the revolution wouldn't work, but he felt compassion for them nonetheless. He wanted to rearrange them as the way he felt compassion for them. And I think that's what he wants for us. Because every revolution I've ever seen, especially when it goes off half-cocked, always falls apart. The only revolution that's ever lasted is when people look after and seek after God, and because of who he has made them to be, then they go out and they lead and they change and they make a difference. C.S. Lewis says, and this is one of my favorite quotes, it's from A Horse and His Boy. And he says, "The reward for a good deed is usually an even harder and better one." So if you think, well, I'm going to do my good deed for the day and Jesus is going to be happy with me and I can go home and have brunch after this, be very careful. Be very, very careful. Because when you decide to feel in your guts, in your splenkizomai, compassion for others, almost every time that it happens, you're going to be asked more and more and more to do for the people around you. But that's preparing you for the revolution, if you will. That's preparing you to be equipped to bless people, to lead people, but it probably won't come until you've done lots and lots and lots of good deeds and felt it way down your bones and wept over the sins of people and the sins of world. Then you might be able to follow after Jesus. So I'm happy, and I pray this all the time, by the way, I'm happy for you praying for your circumstances to change, both in your personal life and in the world. It's a fine prayer. It's one that should be prayed every week. But I invite you to go one step deeper and pray for the transformation of your mind, the transformation of your life, the transformation of your love, the transformation of the way you relate to the whole world has been given to you. And I think the ironic thing is that as we learn to let God take over our lives and love us as we are, as our lives is, the more chance we're going to have to change the world around us. The more chance we will have to find freedom and offer freedom. So I thank God He has given us freedom in Jesus. I thank God that we are not in charge. And I thank God that when He leads us, we have the ability to say yes. Amen.